You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Merlin L. Miller, a U.S. presidential candidate with the American Third Position Party. Merlin, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Merlin, I want to get into great detail about the party and your positions and everything else about your run for the presidency. But before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are, you know, where you were born, and run the gamut as detailed or as non-detailed as you'd like?
Sure, David. And without trying to bore your listeners, I'll start with the fact that I was raised in Iowa and to parents who were actually pretty poor. We were raised in poverty, but they were fortunate. They worked very hard and got themselves into the middle class. So we were very lucky. There was three of us kids. And I was fortunate to be the first and only one in our family to get to go to college. And I received a nomination to West Point and went and attended the class of 1974. And it was just an incredible opportunity for me. It opened up a world of opportunities, and I'm very fortunate to have gone. And of course, the class of 74 has a few people serving our country right now in positions of high responsibility. So I'm very honored to be a part of that class. After that, I did serve 6 years of active duty. Got to command a couple of units. Spent time in Europe and in Texas. Then left the service and decided I wanted to pursue a dream that had been mine since as being a kid. Walt Disney had been one of my idols, as well as the founding fathers, and I always had an interest in the motion picture industry, and tried to go on with the Disney company and didn't have the qualifications, so I got flat rejections and ended up working as an engineering manager for Michelin Tire Company for about 3 years. And during that process, applied to different programs and was finally accepted into the University of Southern California's program in motion picture producing called the Peter Stark Program. And I was fortunate that the director and founder of that program had been a former naval commander, and I think he wanted to bring fresh blood into the industry and some new perspectives, and a very professional man that tried to bring professionalism into the industry. And he's since passed on, but were it not for him, I probably would never have entered the industry, at least with any credibility. Mm-hmm. But that program was from 83 to 85, a two-year grad program, and I was fortunate to intern at Paramount and got to see the studio side. And we were actually trained to be producers of studio productions or studio executives. But graduating that program, I realized really in the industry that it's very controlled and had nothing to do with your talent, your merit. And having graduated high in the class, I thought I might have some opportunities. But the only opportunities for people like me from the Midwest with traditional values was working independent films and little guerrilla films. So that's what I did to get some experience. Spent about 10 years out there. We had all four of our daughters while we were living in California. Very difficult to support a family when you're not making any money. So we eventually, and I was disillusioned with the quality of films coming out of Hollywood and lack of any true opportunities with somebody that I thought should have been able to get some opportunities, things going. There were 20 of us that graduated from my year group in USC, and five were Jewish, and those five went on to make some incredible big motion pictures, not necessarily good motion pictures, but some very high profile motion pictures, and due to this very day. With one other exception, I'm the only other graduate from our class that still considers himself a part of the industry, and that's pretty typical of all of the year groups at USC and in the industry. So it's a very controlled environment. And unfortunately, I think that's sad for our country because it limits the perspectives on entertainment that comes out of Hollywood. But I left after about 10 years and we moved the family to the Midwest and secured funds independently to produce a film and went on and produced a second film. Then we moved down to Florida. Very tough to get funding for independent films. And of course, we did them for a small fraction of the cost that that Hollywood would do them for. But even if you make a good film, which we did, especially with Jericho, the last film, which was a mystery Western, you have a very difficult time trying to get it into distribution and making money off of it so you can move on and do other projects. And we had all kinds of battles, and I wrote pretty extensively about my experiences with that film and with the industry in a treatise that I wrote called The American Dream, which is published at my company website, Americana-Pictures.com. But anyway, the whole thing was an eye-opening experience for me. And while we were actually marketing Jericho, I had somewhat of a life-changing event in that I met a survivor from the USS Liberty. And prior to that, I knew nothing about the Liberty. And in fact, being an Academy grad and knowing Naval Academy grads, nobody in my sphere of influence knew about it, which I thought was pretty bizarre since it was a ship attacked during the Six-Day War, and 34 sailors were killed and 174 others were wounded. But it was basically covered up by our own government, and it was an act of betrayal by our supposed friend Israel. And it was just one of those what we call today false flag events, which was designed to be blamed on somebody else and get America to support Israel's ambitions in the Middle East. So that that shocked me. I began doing research and started connecting intrigues, not only military intrigues, but political intrigues and media intrigues. And it led me ultimately to supporting Ron Paul in 2007, 2008, and getting politically active. Prior to that, politics had no interest for me, and I knew very little of what was really going on in the real world. I was like the dumbed down masses we say today, that their attitudes and beliefs are totally formed by the environment, which is one of political correctness, of a controlled public discourse, and of course of politicians who really aren't protecting or taking care of America's true interests. So that journey led me ultimately into politics. Several supporters of the Ron Paul campaign did eventually form a new party called the American Third Position Party. And I joined their effort this last January when they asked me to head up the ticket to put on a national campaign, primarily, I think, to give some visibility and legitimacy to the party's effort of being a true alternative to the Republican and Democratic parties. So it's been an incredible year, great experiences. We wrote a book during the process called Our Vision for America. I've had a number of interviews and conferences we've attended, done things to try to spread the word. But for the most part, we've had very little to no exposure in the mainstream media. I did also, actually, through some film contacts, went to Iran here recently and was fortunate enough to meet President Ahmadinejad and got very active in trying to understand the situation over in the Middle East. And I wrote a paper, a report on that upon returning, and did a video on Press TV, which has gotten quite a bit of exposure, at least through the alternative media. And basically, it was my version of what I think the realities are in the Middle East, as opposed to what we hear from American politicians and mainstream media. And America is on the precipice right now, and patriots need to stand up. They need to do the right things for our country. And most important part of that is we have to get truths to the American people. We aren't getting truths. And as one of my heroes, Thomas Jefferson, always said, that the key to freedom was an informed public. And that's why it's so critical that shows like yours, David, and other forms of alternative media continue to grow the message, spread the word, and get truths to the American people, with the hope ultimately that we can restore our constitutional republic and get the American dream to be a reality again, so that our kids and grandkids have prospects for a good future.
Very well said. I couldn't agree with you more on pretty much everything regarding getting America back on its feet again. I just hope we can. I don't know. I don't know if it's too late. But as far as the USS Liberty, when was that? That year that you discovered it and...
I believe it was late in 2001 or early in 2002 while we were doing some marketing for Jericho. And so about 10, 11 years ago is when I first learned of it.
Right. It's funny because most people don't come to the conclusions that they do until some things or one thing happens, one particular event. For a lot of people, they woke up after that cast lead invasion by Israel. A lot of people woke up when they found out about the Liberty, because there's so many people who still don't know about it. It's incredible. And you're right now in the process of making a movie about the Liberty, is that right?
Yes, actually, from meeting a survivor, I was fortunate enough to attend some of their reunions, got to know a lot of survivors, and was very interested in telling their story. One of their heroes, one of their champions, who was originally one of the first SEALs and at one time worked for the CIA and a true patriot, really opened a lot of doors for me, and I did a lot of research. And together, we wanted to produce a motion picture. And unfortunately, he was killed in an accident on his return trip home from the crew reunion in 2007, and he was going to meet later that summer with me to help executive produce the project. Unfortunately, of course, with his death, that project was killed. And about 2 years later, I finally went ahead and decided I'm going to proceed with it, and wrote a screenplay. And based on the realities that we don't have the kind of funds or capability to do a major production, I developed the project as though it's a modern day story of political intrigue, which connects the USS Liberty to what's going on in the Middle East today. And it's about a journalist who has to make that connection and ultimately go underground to prevent the war on terror from becoming World War III. So we've entitled the project False Flag, and the screenplay is actually posted at our website at americana-pictures.com, and I'm looking for support for it. In fact, that's why I attended the film festival in Iran. We do have some interest, and my dream is that after the election cycle is over, that I have the possibility of being able to produce this film this next year. I do think it is a landmark project that, if done right and was able to get distributed to the mainstream, could be a game changer. Would really help the American people to understand what is going on in our country, and doing it by way of entertainment. There are a lot of documentaries. There are a lot of things written about these intrigues, but for the most part, it reaches a very small audience, and we're not able to penetrate the mainstream. I think with entertainment, if we do something that has an audience on the edge of their seat and keeps them entertained with characters that are very engaging, but at the same time, we bring our truths in through the surface of the story, and we have some story elements that and some themes that get people to really thinking about what's going on beyond just the entertainment value of the film, then we've got a chance to truly get truths out to the American people and grow our messages, which hopefully can make a difference. And if enough films get made that are truthful films and impactful films, I think that is so critical that we get our country back by way of media as well as political efforts.
It is amazing that I think there have been no less than 5 or 6 documentaries that were made about the Liberty incident. And none of those documentaries, I believe, were ever aired in the United States, only overseas. Are you familiar with that?
I am. I do know one of them aired, I think, one time on the History Channel, and there was such an uproar from certain special interest groups in America that it didn't air again. And unfortunately, that's the situation. And I know from my personal experiences in the motion picture industry that distribution is highly controlled, your theater chains, your distributors. We did find out, though, with Jericho, that if you have a good project, if you have your own distribution capabilities, you can get it out there. The problem is most independent filmmakers just don't have those capabilities. Mel Gibson being an exception, though. If you remember with his The Passion of the Christ, no distributor showed any interest whatsoever in that project. He had to self-fund it, and then ultimately he developed his own distribution effort to get it out to the public. And with a superstar's name, credibility, and with his funds, he was successful in getting it out there and making a film that did gross a lot of money. But that's usually not the case for most independents, and that's the battle we have in building an alternative to Hollywood, is that it takes our own infrastructure. We can't go through the barriers of Hollywood. We have to build our own industry as though Hollywood does not exist, which unfortunately does require a lot of money.
Right. Who are those special interests who were upset that the History Channel had aired a documentary about what happened to the sailors on the USS Liberty?
Well, it's usually the usual suspects. You know, it begins with AIPAC, you know, the American Israel Political Action Committee, the Anti-Defamation League, the Southern Poverty Law Center, all of these groups which supposedly monitor hate groups. If anybody brings the realities or the truths about what goes on in the world, and if it's in any way critical of their agenda, of their protected turf, then they're going to try to brand you as something you're not and put up every barrier they can to prevent you from having success in getting your messages out to the public.
And these people could be considered, and these groups could be considered anti-American and traitors. I don't think that that's too strong of a term.
Would you? No, I think clearly they're agents for foreign interests. They are not serving the American people.
Hollywood isn't going to fund your effort, your film. And you said that you were in Iran looking for help to perhaps fund this project, which would be great, because I also believe that if the type of film that you're talking about was made available to the American public, who unfortunately is on the whole abysmally ignorant about this topic specifically, then that might, as you said, be a game changer as far as relations with our ally, quote unquote. Did Iran show any interest in helping to fund the project?
Well, not directly. I think they would love to help. Of course, they've got sanctions. They've got all kinds of problems they're dealing with themselves right now. So it'd probably be a very difficult prospect for them to help. But I think the cultural bridge, the fact that they are under the gun themselves, and they're reaching out to try to convey to the world that they simply want peace and want to be left alone. And I think that they're very welcoming of trips like the trip that I made, and any effort that we can make to bring truce to the surface and help their cause and help the cause of peace, I think they would try to support and do whatever they could. And of course, they're going to protect their own self-interest. But I was very impressed with them as a people and as a nation. And I certainly don't see them, the way our mainstream media portrays them. You know, it's just it's not the reality.
Right. And you actually met with President for about half an hour, right?
Well, actually, I had two meetings. The first one was at a festival event where I gave a short presentation, and the president was there and gave a speech. And I think my presentation impacted him to where I was given a gift there at the conclusion of that ceremony for that event. And I asked if it might be possible to have a private meeting with him, which he then granted me. And a couple of days later, I went to the presidential offices and spent about 20 minutes there with him in his offices. And a few minutes of that, he actually spent writing a message in the gift book that he had given me, which was a really nice book of poems by Omar Khayyam. So it's a treasure that I have and will always treasure. But I found him to be a very humble, a man of integrity. He looks you in the eye. He had a firm handshake. He seems very concerned for his people, very concerned. And when I asked him what messages I could bring to the American people, he basically reflected truce. He said, Iran does not want war. We're willing to talk. We're willing to do whatever we can to promote peace in the world. But we are a sovereign nation, and you have to respect our nation's rights as well. And so I found him to be a person that reaches out in a very positive way. And I wish our State Department would do the same.
As long as AIPAC has their filthy claws in our State Department, that's probably not going to happen, right?
No. Yeah. Unfortunately.
At least the part of the State Department that is supposed to pay attention to the Middle East seems to be infested and controlled by pro-Israel Americans, even. And I know there are even dual U.S.-Israeli citizens in our government, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. And unfortunately, we have so many dual citizens in key positions of responsibility. And to me, that is just unbelievable. Were I president, one of the first things I would do is remove dual citizens from positions of responsibility. When somebody has a loyalty to another nation, how can they be placed in a position of such critical importance to our nation's security?
I can never figure that out. What are the odds, you think, of your motion picture about the Liberty actually coming into fruition?
Probably not much better than my prospects for being elected president, unfortunately. I say that, but actually there are some possibilities, and it is growing. I think the climate is growing. There's a tidal shift going on right now in our country. So I'm going to make a concerted effort for the next few months to see if we can get to the funding and get False Flag in production by next spring. That's my sincere goal. But it's going to be uphill. Thereafter, I don't know. I've been hitting my head against the wall for a long time trying to get quality projects produced. And the alternative for me, of course, is staying in the political arena and doing what I can to grow the movement to truly represent America's best interest. And if we can, form a coalition of parties, or a new party can emerge, or the American Third Position can get the support to grow, we need a voice for our people. And that voice has been lost. And unfortunately, our people are, for the most part, apathetic to it. They don't realize what has happened to our country. And unfortunately, I do think they will find out here pretty soon, because we're on the verge of economic collapse. And if the Zionists are able and successful in taking this war on terror into World War III, then we'll have a new calamity to deal with. So the American people are on the precipice. They just don't know it. But I do suspect within the next year, more and more people will become aware.
Can listeners do anything to help get that movie out there?
Well, the best way would be to come to the film website, americana-pictures.com, and contact me, whatever we can do to find the support. And, we're producing films at a level which is, inconceivable by Hollywood standards. But Jericho, which was a mystery Western, had the horses, wagons, a lot of action, was made for under $1 million. False Flag, also being a political thriller, can be made with high quality and for less than $1 million. So we're not talking great sums of money relative to what Hollywood would spend. Of course, relative to my lifestyle, it's a fortune. But that's the kind of support we would need. And I think there are all kinds of alternatives developing for distribution, especially through the internet. And we may just find some support out there if we can produce a quality film. So I think there are some prospects, but with no certainty.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure that anybody listening and understanding the importance of the Liberty will take a look at your website and help you, because I don't know how many people there are who are aware of the Liberty, but could you imagine if at least all the people who are aware of the Liberty who are listening to this just go to your website and chip in some money? I mean, this could be a real group effort to finally expose these people for what they are.
Well, that's true. And with a certain level of funding support, then you can find other elements that'll come forward and help you. And sometimes it just takes a small catalyst to get things really rolling.
Right. Small minority, which is what we're up against.
I may not have mentioned it earlier, but I'm actually going back to Iran in December.
Okay. And what's that for?
There's a conference going on. It's actually a public relations conference for the Islamic world to basically try to get their message out that there should not be the great differences, there should not be the demonization, and that they want to reach out to not only the Christian world, but to all the global community with peace and have their message conveyed in such a way that it's truthful. So this conference is going on with that purpose of trying to, you know, build bridges and to develop a strategy and a game plan so that the Islamic world has a public relations game plan that can counter all the demonization that they've been going through.
Boy, they have really been having all this stuff heaped on them from this monolith of a mainstream media that we have here that is only controlled by a few families. Have you researched the families themselves, the entities that control the bulk of the mainstream media in the United States?
Well, yes, I have. And of course, it goes back to Jewish control and ties into, you know, of course, the Rothschild banking empire and all, and very Zionist centric in their approach. And, you know, of course, it's very concerning to me. And my hero, Walt Disney, of course, experienced this, you know, nearly 100 years ago. But at that time, the industry was not as totally controlled as it is today.
Unbelievable. Let's talk about your run for the presidency, because this is pretty huge, I think. And the reason that it is because I'm in New Jersey, and that is one of the few states that you're actually on the ballot for. Isn't that true?
It is. We're on in Tennessee, Colorado, and New Jersey, and we have write-in status in about a dozen other states.
That's terrific. I have somebody to vote for. I can't believe it. As I told you earlier, I was just going to give up, because what's the use when you have Mo and Curly, or whatever you want to call them? You've got Obama and Romney. You're going to get the same group, really, controlled by the same people. They're controlled by the same special interests, aren't they?
They are, and that's why it's so critical that we have a viable third-party movement develop, and I think the timing is perfect for it. You're going to see a great deal of nationalism coming forth now, and the American people are getting wise to this. They may not have figured it all out and understand it all, but they do know that they're not being properly represented by the Republicans and Democrats. They're tired of career politicians representing special interests rather than them. If we have the right messages and the timing is right, people are starting to suffer, they're going to be looking for answers. And if you have the right answers, if you have a party infrastructure, if you have something that people want to be a part of, something that you know, gives them a sense of camaraderie, of joining the right team, I think we have an incredible opportunity to grow a new party, a new movement. And it's not necessarily a new movement. I think Ron Paul was the catalyst for truce and trying to do the statesman-like things within the government. And I credit him with basically opening people's eyes to the evils of the Federal Reserve System and how our Constitution is under assault. So the movement is growing from a lot of quarters. You've got a lot of people in politics today, but we need a coalition effort. We need something to bring people together so that they're fighting these common evils, the evils that everybody recognizes. And it means somewhat giving up some of your own agenda. But I think, you know, if you go back in history, 2,000 years ago, a man named Arminius succeeded in uniting the Germanic tribes to stop the evils of the Roman Empire. And that was an impossible task for him to do, because all of these tribes were fiercely independent, would never get along on anything. But for a short period in time, they did come together and change the course of history in Europe. Northern Europe became Anglo-Saxonized rather than Romanized. And we're in a parallel situation right now in America today, with our country evolving from a constitutional republic into an evil empire. And we need to stand up and stop this. And more patriot groups are rising. You see it through the internet. You see it everywhere, really. Just mainstream media doesn't want to acknowledge it. It's grown by way of the Tea Party, the Occupy movement, and all these patriot groups. And for the most part, they're leaderless. And I think that's the problem we have today. We need new leaders. We need a new party to come forward and help unite people with truths so that they do want to stand up and overcome their apathy and get politically active again and go out and vote and don't vote for the lesser of the evils. Vote your conscience. Vote on principle. And we will make a difference. We can get the numbers up of people that will support the right thing.
How was it getting on the ballot in those three states?
Well, it's not easy. And of course, these states are some of the easier ones, which made it possible for us. But some states require thousands of signatures on petition, thousands of dollars in the case of, you know, your application processes. Most states are still fairly reasonable. But unless you have a lot of money, unless you have an infrastructure of supporters in those states, it's very difficult to get on the ballot. And of course, the Republicans and Democrats try to make it so. They don't want competition. So we've got to find ways to have election reform and try to get the huge sums of money out of the process, because they're able to control it by way of the leverages they have with their huge amounts of money.
Right. What is most needed here to help this party grow, do you think? The one thing that's most needed?
Well, you know, you need a catalyzing event or organization, and I would love to be a part of building that. And I've talked to various people about putting on a gathering of eagles where you get some great minds together, people that are patriot leaders. Perhaps some of the other parties would have an interest in joining in this, and put the common good first and forget and leave at home all of your differences and put America first again. And those critical issues, and in our party platform, there are probably three or four issues that I think most every American would agree with. And if we could get a united consensus on those most critical issues, I think we'd have a party movement that would grow phenomenally fast and would be a very powerful force within probably just a couple of years and maybe very quickly if we do have a collapse or other things happen this next year.
I just want to go over the party a bit. Now, I did watch that terrific video on your website, which is MerlinMiller2012.com. It's only about 3.5 minutes, but really it packs a lot of information in there. And I did take a couple of notes, and the motto for the party would be liberty, sovereignty, and identity. Is that right?
It is, yes.
Liberty pretty much is self-explanatory, so sovereignty, so we're not beholden to any other foreign nations. What about identity? What exactly do you mean by that?
Most of the founding members of the American Third Position Party came from Ron Paul's camp, but Ron Paul tends to be very libertarian, and the one difference they had, and I think was one of the reasons they wanted to form a new effort, in addition to the fact that they knew Ron Paul would be marginalized, was that they wanted to address our sovereignty and our identity as a nation. And some of them would be called white nationalists, in some cases falsely called white separatists or other derogatory names, but from my perspective, that's not the case at all. Those are false brandings. Most of these people truly want a level playing field. They want our Constitution back. They've experienced discrimination themselves, a form of reverse discrimination. And if you look at what has happened to our country, especially since the mid-60s, we were 90% European derived. And for our first couple hundred years of our nation's history, the founding documents of our founding fathers and all the efforts that went into building this great country were for the most part by Europeans, European Americans. And we were 90% European derived until the mid-60s, when the Immigration Act of 1965 came into being. That altered everything. It threw that upside down. And today we're about two-thirds European derived and predicted to be a minority within the next 30 years. Now that's really bizarre. That's a bizarre attack on a nation's identity. And most people aren't even aware of it. But if you study this and you realize, no, there is an agenda afoot, and this is a very destructive thing for our nation. And I think that was the catalyst for identity being a part of the platform for the American Third Position Party. Not that they have any animosities toward other ethnic groups, religions, or races, or languages, but we are America, and we want to preserve what was important in building our country. We want to preserve our traditions. We want the English language to be the language of America. We don't want massive immigration dispossessing the white majority in America. If that happens, you know, like the Tower of Babel, we will truly lose the special qualities that we had in making our nation strong and special. So, you know, like I say, there's no animosities to other groups, but other groups do have their own interests. And in our opinion, they're not necessarily the best interests for our country. So we have to stand up and make sure that the field is level, that we don't have affirmative action laws or quotas, special mandates coming from the federal government, which are advantaging some some groups and disadvantaging other groups. That's simply not fair. I don't believe in discrimination against any group. I think it's unreasonable to do those sort of things. And I think that is one of the reasons that I was brought in to the American Third Position Party, was to try to moderate that message and say, hey, this is about America first, and we just want to protect everybody's interest, but that also includes the white majority.
Right. And of course, that 1965 change in the immigration law has been detailed by one of the party's significant members, and that's Dr. Kevin MacDonald. He showed how that actually was done. You're familiar with all that, right?
Yes, I am. And he's a great scholar. I've got great respect for Dr. Kevin MacDonald.
He studied exactly how it was that the United States government adopted a shift to allowing more immigrants into the country and who was behind it. And I think it's probably safe to say that Jewish groups were behind it. Isn't that right?
Well, yes. And in fact, in that 3-minute video you referred to, there are 5 ways that nations are destroyed. And of course, the changing demographics, the immigration invasion is one of the 5 ways that you destroy a nation, by destroying its character and identity. But if you look at all of the other means of destroying a nation, you will also find the same handprints all over them. I mean, Zionism, of course, is one of the leading movements, in my opinion, that is destroying our country. And of course, Jewish American support largely is innocent. But largely it's not. And my great hope is that the Jewish community in America will wake up to the evils of Zionism and start to put America first, put their American identity before their Jewish identity, and especially before their identity with the State of Israel.
Let's go over those 5 points. You mentioned the immigration invasion, which was number 3 in the video. We have number 1, financial tyranny. If I got them right, let me know if I recorded them right. Financial tyranny, number 1. 2, military interventionism. 3, immigration invasion. 4, moral degeneracy. And 5, government dysfunction. Was I right about those 5?
Yes, very good.
Okay, thank you. The first one, financial tyranny. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, there are 2 aspects of this, in my opinion. One, of course, is our currency. We've got a currency that's been debased. Almost 100 years ago, the Federal Reserve System, a group of private bankers really took over the control, the issuance of our currency and the establishment of rates. The Treasury should be responsible for that. And of course, our Constitution says that our currency should be backed, commodity backed, by silver or gold. And of course, right now what we have are banker-controlled currency, and it's a fiat currency. They can create it out of thin air, which of course then devalues the value of everybody's existing currency. So we've got that debasement of the value of our currency ongoing. And of course, then all of those funds are then paid with interest charges back to the private holders of the Federal Reserve banking system. It's been organized theft from the American people for nearly 100 years, and most Americans are not even aware of how this works. So that form of economic tyranny, of course, is at the heart of all of these evils, because this banking system funds so many of the other things that are at play to destroy our country and destroy the world. The other aspect of financial tyranny is, of course, what's going on with the production. We're losing production in America. It's going overseas. It's being outsourced. And of course, our laws, our politicians are betraying the American workers, are betraying American companies. We have a tremendous need to impose tariffs again on goods coming into this country, simply to level the playing field. Right now, we're operating under these so-called free trade agreements, which are not fair in any way. They advantage multinational corporations, and they advantage our foreign competitors, which is why so many companies are moving out of America to where they can go to the low-cost labor sources. And we can't compete against that. We need to level the playing field with tariffs, protective things, which these other nations do against our imports. So we just need to be smart. We need to free our business people, get the government out of everybody's lives so we don't have all these taxes, all the red tape, preventing our entrepreneurs from creating and preventing our workers from being able to compete again. So that's the other half of the financial tyranny that's going on right now in America.
And number 2, military interventionism. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. You mentioned, I didn't quite catch the number, about 140 places we are right now.
Yeah, there's about 140 nations that we have military presence in, about 800 bases. And that's just incredible. We're funding the national defense of all these other countries, and we're trying to police the world. And our founding fathers would be rolling over in their graves if they knew what has happened to America. We should bring those troops immediately home, protect our own borders, take care of things here at home, and not try to impart our will on other nations, but preserve our sovereignty and honor the sovereignty of other nations.
Of course, we talked about number 3, immigration invasion. And I think the moral degeneracy is very clear. You're talking about the influence of the mainstream media in Hollywood, right?
Very much so. I've been a part of it now for, 30 years almost. And I've seen it from inside how it works. It's an insidious game. These rules are not written rules, but they're rules nonetheless. And they're destroying our country by not allowing quality alternative entertainment. It's a very directed agenda to destroy our values and our belief system.
Number five, government dysfunction. What exactly do you mean by that? I mean, we could say that, the government, of course, is dysfunctional, but how do you mean they're dysfunctional?
Well, money and the power of special interest groups has corrupted the whole process. We have career politicians today that don't serve their constituencies. They work for, as puppets, these special interest groups. They're bought. And if we would get back to the spirit of our Constitution, they should just go for a very short period of time, not be career politicians, go back to their constituencies and work and truly represent their areas. But what we have right now is money dictates, and our laws have gotten to such an extent that you can have one political action committee. You can have one individual putting up millions, billions if they wanted, into somebody's campaign and totally corrupts the process. So, of course, government dysfunction, and we have the growth of government becoming a monster where government is the answer, the end all, which it was never designed to be in our government. Government should be very small. The people rule. The people are sovereign, and government should be answerable to the people. But we've grown it, and we've turned it upside down where everybody really answers to the tyranny of government now. And that's why we're in need of a new revolution, hopefully a peaceful revolution, but we need one all the same to where we can regain our rights and put government back in its place.
How many people are volunteering for the party and for your effort to become president?
Well, we're organized. I think we're in like 35 or 40 states now that we have a presence, but it's very small. I mean, in terms of total numbers, we still number in the hundreds as far as members of the party. We have a support group numbering in the thousands, people that come to the website that I think truly support our position. But for the most part, it's all been through the alternative media. The party's only a couple of years old. This year is our first national campaign. So without a lot of money, without a mainstream media presence, most of America just doesn't know about us. That may change. We've got a few things at play right now which are starting to reach us into the mainstream. So hopefully we can continue with that.
How many actual volunteers are there who are helping with the party?
Well, we have a small board of directors, and each of them have their own network of people. So I would suspect there's probably only a few hundred who are active on the ground doing things, whether it's, collecting signatures on petitions or spreading the word, having meetings. Probably only a few hundred that are actually very active in doing that on our behalf right now. And we need to grow that. We need to have tens of thousands of people doing that for us.
But hey, that's a start, right?
It is. It is. We're very new, and I'm new to politics. The party is new. So it's a beginning.
I'm excited. I must say that I'm somebody who lives without hope the majority of the time, but this is exciting. Well, you're in my state, you're in two other states, and you could be a write-in candidate, you said, in 12 other states?
Yes, and I'm an optimist. I do think this message is going to grow. People at the beginning of the year didn't have this expectation for us. So I think we've surprised a lot of people. There's some interesting things going on in not only in the country, but internationally that I think could promote our effort and bring our message to the mainstream, not through the barriers of the mainstream, but in other ways.
Merlin, would you like to summarize your thoughts for the audience?
I think really it just comes down to everybody needs to see the importance of the times we're living in and stand up to do right. Family is so important, and we've forgotten our faith. We've forgotten our family. We've been distracted by everything imaginable, whether it's wars, whether it's decadence in media, all aspects of our lives, the laws which affect our work lives and affect the home and affect our kids through education. We have so much we need to stand up and put a check on. And if people will overcome their apathy and stand up and say, I am going to vote for my conscience, I'm going to do the right thing, and not support the perpetuation of this evil, then we can take our country back quickly. And I do believe it's coming, and we need to do it soon. If we don't do it within the next few years, I do think America's lost. But I am an optimist. I do see an awakening going on. I see it in the military. I see it in our intelligence services. And I see it in the general public. They don't have the answers yet, but if we can provide them the answers and get our word out to them, then I think we can rally a lot of people together and make a difference. So I hope that people will stand up and help.
Merlin L. Miller, a 2012 presidential candidate for the American Third Position Party. I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. And thanks for doing what you're doing. And thanks for caring about the country the way you do. And I would just encourage the listeners to go to the websites. Go to MerlinMiller2012.com. Go to Americana-pictures.com. Take a look around. Merlin, thanks again so much.
Thank you, David. Appreciate your help.